T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Seems like an appropriate thing to do.
There you go.
Cross him off if he's dead. This hour on the score brought to you by St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. Got a full boat of NFL games tonight. It's going to be great.
There it is. Yeah, it is. Lots of familiar faces in new places. Where are they now? It's time to play on the McNeil and Parkin Show.
Brian in Grundy Center, Iowa, I was told, is up.
Correct.
Go ahead, Mac, me or you first?
I'll take the first one. All right, listen up, Brian, and good luck to you. If you get it right, you win a score prize pack. When the Bears got Brandon Marshall, they became his third NFL team in just 7 seasons. He then hit New York to play for both the Jets and Giants. This year, Marshall will be wearing this uniform.
Oh, boy. Is it Miami?
No, it is not Miami. This year, Brandon Marshall is a member of your Seattle Seahawks.
It's funny that he keeps bouncing around to new teams.
Imagine that.
Given that he's so easy in the locker room to deal with.
I would say this about B. Marsh, though, if I can call him that. He probably is on my Mount Rushmore of mistreated Chicago athletes on their way out the door. The way Chicago media and fans talked about Brandon Marshall, you'd think this organization had been steeped in fabulous wide receivers historically, when in fact he was the best they've ever had over a 2-year stretch.
Yeah, it wasn't all about his football production, though, as to why he was criticized on his way out the door.
But I know.
I hear what you're saying. He was and at times can still be a wildly talented wide receiver, but at this point also way past his prime. Let's go to the south side and welcome Omar to new faces and new places. How's it going, Omar?
Hello?
Yeah, Omar!
I'm good, man.
Hey. All right, man. You ready for this? Here we go. As a player, yep. He started Ohio State and for the Patriots. This year, he's a rookie head coach for the Tennessee Titans. Who am I?
I have no clue.
Okay. That is not the answer, Omar. Thanks for calling. Mike Vrabel is the new head coach of the Tennessee Titans.
I had the over on Mike Vrabel tackles in their Super Bowl win over the Seahawks when Pete Carroll and Daryl Bevel made that boneheaded, and it was one of my many tickets cashed on that Super Bowl Sunday. Bet the over on Mike Vrabel tackles.
We're happy for you.
Thank you.
Most people who have left the Patriots tree have not been very successful, whether it be coaches or executives, right? They've been good as coordinators, but, you know, Bill O'Brien may be the most successful. You think of Eric Mangini, who has failed, Romeo Crennel, who's failed as a head coach, Scott Pioli as an executive. We'll see if Mike Vrabel can get it done. We go now to Oak Forest and Clark on the score.
Clark, here is your question. With which team did 4-time Pro Bowl cornerback Richard Sherman sign a $39 million deal in March?
I believe that is San Francisco 49ers.
We have a winner! Nicely done, Clark.
That was an easy one.
Yeah, that was an easy one.
That's all right.
Yeah, that's okay.
There's a little bit of luck of the draw in this game.
No doubt.
Every single
kind of like pick a player.
Exactly right. The category, how much you know it, and how bad the person you're going up against is. Let's go to Naperville and welcome Lewis to Where Are They Now? I've called it Where Are They Now and New Faces, New Places.
Well,
does that matter?
Well, it would be same faces, new places.
Same faces.
Yeah, they didn't get a new face. Richard Sherman took the same face to San Francisco.
All right, I don't know what I'm doing. Excellent point by you. All right, Lewis. The Lions are this 31-year-old power back's seventh NFL team. He won another ring in February.
LeGarrette Blount?
That is correct.
Nicely done.
Well done. LeGarrette Blount in the NFC North.
Yeah, seven teams for LeGarrette Blount. He's a talented football player, man. I like him. Short yardage, can you think of a ton of backs you'd rather have than him?
Not many, and small prediction on Jordan Howard is he goes down in rushing yards this year. Obviously, up in receiving yards, hard to go down. But his fantasy value this year won't be as much with his rushing yards as it will be with his touchdowns.
I think
he's going to be a double-digit touchdown guy in this offense.
Yeah, okay. And that's why you'll tell Shep to shut up when you guys partner. All right.
We'll talk about that. Behind Shep's back, too.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Better in his front.
Ah, look at you. My God, you really are a game show host today. Mike, go ahead. You're next.
Mike is calling from Sterling, hometown of some guy who made a start against one of our local ball clubs the other night. Mike, here is your question. Former Broncos running back C.J. Anderson will wear this uniform in 2018. Where's C.J. Anderson at?
C.J. Anderson going to be in Denver?
No. That would be a same face in the same place. He left Denver and is now a member of the Carolina Panthers. He's C.J. Anderson.
I that's the first one I would not have gotten.
I didn't know it until this morning.
That's a tough spot. And I wonder how much he'll be used. I mean, he's had injury problems, and with Christian McCaffrey, everyone's talking. Word out of Panthers camp is he's going to have a huge role in that offense this
year. I would
think. He's awesome.
He had a huge role last year.
No, I know, yeah. But even more so running the ball in addition to catching the ball. I think he's an awesome football player. I'd want him on Shep and I's team. Let's go to Canton and welcome BJ to same face, new place. I'm learning.
Hi, BJ.
Hello. This new Los Angeles Rams defensive lineman is the second highest paid defensive player in NFL history. Who am I?
A new one. Let's see. I was going to say Aaron Donald. He's already there.
Yep, he is.
Well, I'm going to miss this one. I'm 5-for-5, and now you give me the tough one.
I don't believe that you got C.J. Anderson, BJ. I'm calling BS on that one. That would be Ndamukong Suh.
Yes, the 17th highest earner in NFL history. The only defensive player who has earned more, Julius Peppers.
Fun fact on the follow-up there. I really that's the team that should have been on Hard Knocks, by the way. Marcus Peters and Aqib Talib as cornerbacks, and
yeah.
Sue and the Aaron Donald situation. That's the team that should have been on Hard Knocks this year. You know, I don't care if it would have happened again, Anthony Aaron. I don't care. I want to see that again. I don't care. all right, Joe in Elmhurst.
Joe, welcome to Where Are They Now? Or as Danny says, new faces, new places. Because they all got faceless. Here, yeah, you're welcome. Ron Rivera's defensive coordinator last season is now the 49-year-old rookie head coach of the Arizona Cardinals. Who is he?
Steve Wilks.
Nicely done, Steve Wilks. Hang on, we'll get your vitals. Get you a score prize pack.
Well done there. That's a strong pull from the coaching carousel.
That's good.
Yeah, well done. Griff in Crystal Lake. You are up next. We got, what, three more to go?
I believe so,
You got one, I got two. The 49ers now employ this stout and powerful running back who rushed for 95 yards and a touchdown in the Vikings' first win over the Bears last season.
Is it Jerick McKinnon?
Nice pull!
Nicely done!
That's a good pull. That man knows his football. Jerick McKinnon. Productive back. You love him.
I do love Jerick McKinnon more than I probably should.
I think so.
Yeah. Well, he had that big game against the Bears when the Vikings won the first game. In the second game against the Bears, Latavius Murray had the big game against the Bears.
And I know that if anyone wasn't sure, that Max scripted out these descriptions of the players because that's how stout and powerful is how you described Adam Delavitt.
It is. Yeah. Right. Not anymore, though. I'm told Gridiron Assassin told me he's a fraction of his old self.
I saw him Fairly recently, looking very good. Out. Very thin.
Yeah.
Very thin, yeah, not quite as stout.
Kind of like the afternoon show audience over there is getting the
Still powerful, though, I assume. Yes. Will in St. Charles, you're up next.
All right, Will, here is your question, sir, and thank you for playing. After three productive seasons with the Patriots, Deion Lewis signed a four-year, $20 million deal with whom?
The Tennessee Titans.
Nicely played.
Very confident. Executed that one nice.
Well done.
I'm pretty impressed overall with the McNeil and Parkins audience. Last one, Jim in Lockport. This man succeeds the overmatched Ben McAdoo as the first-year head coach of the New York Football Giants.
Shermer.
Yeah, that is correct.
Yeah, we're going to give him. Give him that one.
That'd be Pat Shermer, the old offensive coordinator of the Minnesota Vikings under Mike Zimmer.
Yeah. I was very disappointed when they decided to part company with Ben McAdoo because I thought he was just such a cartoon character on that Giant sideline.
Ben McAdoo, the way he handled that Eli Manning situation.
I know.
Like he treated Eli Manning like he was Andy Dalton. Like he treated Eli Manning like it was Tyrod Taylor. Uh-huh. It was insane. It's like, you know this guy's a multiple-time Super Bowl MVP in New York, right? Like you're aware of that. It's like I'm just gonna end this consecutive game streak. No big deal.
You know, I agree with you, but of all of the recent Super Bowl winners outside of Joe Flacco, which guy has crapped the bed more consistently than Eli?
Don't get it twisted. I think Eli sucks.
Okay.
Like I think he is one of the luckiest quarterbacks in the history of the NFL. And I should amend what I said. McAdoo's thing was he was going to allow Eli to get that token start to keep his consecutive game started streak going and then bench him after he got the start. And Eli was like, no, don't embarrass me like that. But Ben McAdoo, you know, inflated ego, confidence, football coach guy. Sorry, man. You're not good enough at your job to make that decision in a vacuum about Eli Manning.
You're right. I don't remember where I heard this last football season, but I thought it was absolutely hysterical. I give you attribution if it's yours, if you're a teammate here at the Score. But somebody described Ben McAdoo with that bad mustache and the oversized like vinyl coat that didn't even fit him. He looked like the guy in the front row at a fantasy football convention who's the first one to raise his hand with a question. I thought that was an outstanding description of McAdoo.
That is pretty good. Does he have a job? Did Ben McAdoo land on his feet? Is he out of the NFL?
Maybe he's an analyst. That might be fun. As long as he gets to wear his oversized Giants vinyl jacket.
I can't imagine being like, you know what I'm going to do? Because it's not like they had Deshaun Watson or Pat Mahomes or Mitch Trubisky.
Right.
It was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to bench a future Hall of Famer, two-time Super Bowl MVP, who has a consecutive game started streak going when the whole damn team is injured. So it's not like, you know, it was totally Eli Manning's fault. I'm going to bench him for Davis Webb. That's going to go over really well in New York.
Yeah.
Can't read the room.
I thought our contestants did very well.
We won, what, 6 out of 10? 7 out of 10?
Yeah, maybe 5 or 6. But I thought they did very, very well. And it's good to do this game right around this time of the year because some people don't pay attention to all of it in the offseason or they have forgotten. I learned a few things today myself.
Yeah, no question about it. And speaking of same face, new place, Bernstein and McKnight on Monday, August 27th from 9 a.m. to 1, they will be broadcasting live from the Budweiser Brickhouse Tavern in Wrigley. And they've got every new pitcher of the Cubs.
I was very excited when I heard them promote this today. Cole Hamels is going to be in the house.
Yeah, and Jesse Chavez and Brandon Kinstler will be there as well from noon to 1 for the final installment of the Cubs on Deck Luncheon Series presented by AZEK Building Products and Xfinity. Tickets on sale now at 670thescore.com/ondeck. Yeah, Chavez and Kinstler, not nearly as big a names, obviously, but all three of them share, those are the guys that Theo and Jed looked to say, hey, you're going to be the pitching reinforcements this year. They're all newcomers joining a team in the middle of a pennant race.
That's going to be a terrific show, and it just happens to be on my birthday, the 27th of August, and my first day back from vacation. And maybe I'll stop down. Maybe I will make that my first stop on my way home. I am giving consideration to timing my return trip where I would get back to Chicago about 2 hours before showtime and just drive through the night. I'm considering that so I can get a few more hours on the water on Eagle Lake.
All right. Well, that sounds like a horrible idea, but awesome for you. But let's just set the odds right now that Mac takes an extra day. You're telling me you're going to drive through the night, end your vacation, your solo fishing trip in your Mecca, your happiest place on earth, on your birthday to come back, not for a football Monday?
Done it before. Not for a non-football Monday, but no, at the drive. I went and saw the Stones in Detroit on a Thursday evening and drove back through the middle of the night. And at 5:15 in the morning, Pete McMurray and I said hello to a morning drive audience.
Yeah, on your birthday?
That has nothing to do. You don't really care anymore.
Listen, I don't care either, but I mean...
Just to milk one more day out of my vacation, I'm considering doing that. But that's not why you called.
No, do whatever. That'd be great.
The proposal on the table is this. We had a defection in my fantasy football league this summer. Yurko has left us after being a member of the league since he was... first year out of the NFL, 0-1, I believe, is when he joined our league. So I think part of it's him having an issue with the commissioner last year. You know, when you were on vacation, Shep and I did about a 35-minute segment taking calls from people who had fantasy football drama and how bad it gets.
We're on our fourth commissioner.
That's how it goes. It's just like men acting like 13-year-old girls. You know, just
we're on our. It's the same group of guys. I'm the new guy in the group because I moved there in third grade is when I've known all of these guys from. And we're through four commissioners because of little controversies. Then people being like, all right, I'm done being the commissioner of this league.
It's amazing.
It's petulant.
It really is. And it'll continue, and I'll continue to soak it up.
Yeah, of course.
But guys in my league here at the 11th hour have asked me to ask you and or Shep to join the Mackey Tops Fantasy Football League. And I didn't want to invite just one of you because I didn't want to hurt the other's feelings. I don't
suspect
Sandy.
Screw Tanny.
I don't care.
I
don't want to do it.
Yeah, so. I knew he wouldn't want to do it.
But that sounds like a fun draft. I'm a big time. I don't want to be in your league, but I'll definitely attend the draft.
I'm one
of those guys.
Yeah,
I'm
big hang of the draft.
Yeah,
of course.
Just to hear all the parody songs. The ink is black. He's Lendale White. You guys probably don't know the song.
I don't know the song or what the
it's
hell.
It's by a band called Three Dog Night many, many years ago.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I got a lot. This will shock no one. I got a lot of issues with
this. Yeah, he doesn't want a partner. He doesn't want a co-pilot. Why was I even thinking that was a possibility, Tanny? You know how this guy works.
Well, I got more issues than that. So we'll get into the issues that I have with this proposal. But, thank you. It's very generous. And Jason Stark at 340 on the score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
McNeil and Parkins on the score, brought to you by Lakeside Bank. Banking is pretty much one size fit all, but if you don't fit, you don't matter. At Lakeside Bank, people do matter, so they customize tailoring their products and services to fit you. Join Lakeside Bank. It's about time. So I don't want to seem ungrateful at the...
I told you my feelings won't be hurt if you refuse.
At the offer. This is a legendary fantasy league. It's a big money league.
It's not. $500, is that a big money league in fantasy?
That's at the higher end of the spectrum, I would think.
Really?
Look at the face that you're making. You are so out of touch with the common man. Yeah, you don't think $500 is an expensive fantasy league?
I know guys who are in much higher stakes fantasy leagues.
Sure. Listen, I'm happy. Not that part is not an issue to me at all. I'm always looking for new ways to gamble
for you,
in the NFL.
For you, 302 gift certificates.
Thank you very much. That'd be perfect. Your league's a little weird. You got defensive linemen and coaches and also offensive line
players. We don't have coaches yet. I haven't gotten that passed yet. We're with the rules committee is stalled until we have an eighth team owner.
Oh, there's only eight teams.
Only eight teams. So guess what? Stars play.
Stars play.
Yeah.
Okay, I like that.
Yeah.
That's all right. Now you're, all right. Sharing a team with Shep scares me a little bit. Not because it's Shep, but because it's me. Like I like control. And what if I get the third pick and I want Alvin Kamara and he wants Ezekiel Elliott?
See, my issue with Shep in fantasy is we were doing a fantasy baseball league. I think it was last year, some people here, and it took a while for him to pay. So you may have to do half.
Start the buses.
Oh my goodness.
Listen.
Wow.
If I'm split in a 500 fantasy league with Shep, he's got to put that money up on Front Street. But I'm thinking that maybe
yes,
that
all the money is required up front.
All the money. My guess is that that's a little too rich for Shep's fantasy blood, and it'll come down to whether or not I want to join this league. But an 18 league, so that sounds good. Sharing a team, I'm not too interested in.
Why wouldn't you be desirous of having defensive players individually, a down lineman, a linebacker, and a secondary member?
Too much work? Maybe afraid of change. Like
I get it.
So is a defensive player ever taken in the first round?
No. They don't start going until around round 10 or round 11. There have been a few exceptions and only guys who got – when J.J. Watt was involved as a tight end a few years ago, his value was crazy high because you get his touchdowns.
Sure, of course. So that's the other – I would just need to learn how to do it, and then that brings
I'd be happy to teach you.
Well, then I'm taking advice from someone in the league, and then are you telling me the truth? I'm kidding.
You think I'd sabotage you? You think you'd get a little sabotage?
But here's the main issue. I'm a bracket of integrity guy in the NCAA tournament. I fill out one bracket.
Me too.
I have one fantasy team.
Me too. You have one wife.
I got one wife.
You got one girlfriend.
Exactly right. I got one radio show. It's like
I'm the same way. I've never been in more than one.
So, like, what in your league? I'm playing the Rams defense, but
wouldn't play the Rams defense. You would play Aaron Donald as your down lineman,
right?
And then
maybe
you'll play, if he signs, Roquan Smith will be your linebacker. And then maybe you'll take Richard Sherman as your corner.
Okay, I got Alvin Kamara on my team in my friend's league, but in your league, I'm playing against Alvin Kamara.
You're rooting
Kamara.
Against you. I know.
I'm rooting
That's
against
myself.
That's
part of the reason I don't do it.
It's hedging your bets, and I'm team no hedge. I don't enjoy it. So, like, that to me, that is the biggest issue. And then, also, I should note, Speaks left your league. Speaks, by the way, coming in for transition, coming up in 2 hours and 15 minutes. The only reason this team is available is because Yurko left your league. It's like your ex-partners leave your league. I want to be your partner here for a while.
You think that has something to do?
I got professional aspirations here to stay around. I don't want to, sully. I can't be losing fantasy leagues, starting fantasy leagues, all sorts of things like
that. I get
that.
Believe me, I totally get the monogamy part of it. I never have been desirous of joining more. No, that's it. I just one league for that same reason.
There's a lot going on there.
You got a football soulmate who comes over and he's got four pieces of paper in front of him for all of his leagues. And I'm going to have too good of a day because I'm playing against him in two leagues.
Listen, if Shep's not in, the truth is I'll probably do it because I like new ways to gamble on the NFL every year. I got 200 right now committed to two entries into a $100 survivor pool, where it's 30 grand to first place. My dream has always been to either win a 50-50 raffle at a game or a survivor pool to have some sort of huge cash ticket. So then if I got, 250 for my fantasy league, 500 for yours, that's about 1,000 up front for football gambling, then plus week-to-week gambling, like I can probably make that work. That's an expensive football wagering commitment.
I also don't
win when I gamble on the NFL like you do.
A little. I just win a little, and it's only for the last couple of years. I don't pretend to have this rich history. You went to school with a guy named Rich History, didn't you?
Yeah.
Of winning on pro and college football. I don't. I've given away a lot of it since the early 90s.
Yeah. Well, I've
sponsored more than one vacation to a warm weather climate in February.
For bookies?
Oh, yeah. My bookies all have had great names, too.
Really?
Augie, Chucky, and Rogie. So perfect, right?
That's pretty good. My favorite's Kid for me, but it just goes by Kid. I'm like, okay. All right, give me a minute. Give me a minute. But
you can sleep on it. After hearing you hedge, I want to let the six other owners in my league sleep on it too. Because I'm sure a few of them are standing by, yeah, waiting for your big announcement.
Well, listen, that's a lot of pressure being in two fantasy leagues. You understand?
I totally get it.
When's the draft?
We don't have a date yet. We're trying to find an eighth team.
You need a team.
Somebody texted McNeil, 8-team league, ? Grow up. What does that mean?
It's very easy. It's much easier to draft in an 8-team league. I'm in a 12-team league. You got to go a lot deeper onto, you know, teams, third wide receivers in good offense versus what best wide receivers in bad offenses.
So in
like
a 16-team league, everybody takes a lot of joy in starting a quarterback who's a bum. That's what happens in a 16-team league.
It's not joy, but there's undeniably more. You got to have deeper NFL knowledge.
Look at it this way, though. You also have tougher decisions to make. Do I play Ben Roethlisberger on the road, who's not always good on the road, or do I play Alex Smith at home, who's hot right now? In years past.
True, no, for sure. That in my league, we do 12 teams. Everyone starts one quarterback, but we have an any flex, a super flex position. So the vast majority of teams start two quarterbacks. Which I like about that is it's more representative of the real NFL, where quarterback is the most valuable position. I think it's ridiculous. You start one quarterback, they don't go till the Aaron Rodgers goes in the third round, then most quarterbacks aren't going to the fifth, sixth, seventh round. It's the most valuable position. You're telling me I'm taking the 13th running back before I'm taking Aaron Rodgers?
That's why this league, you'd find it appealing, because it's very heavily weighted on quarterbacks. A good week for a quarterback, points-wise, 70.
Oh, wow.
A good week for a running back, 35. So it's heavily weighted point-wise on quarterbacks, so that speaks to real NFL.
I do like that.
Yeah, offensive lines. You hate that part of it.
So how do you grade the offensive line?
There's only two ways to score, and that is the first of which is penalty. I'm sorry, not penalties. It's rushing yards. It's slotted. 125 to 149 is 5 points. 150 to 174 is 10 points. 175 rushing yards or more, a max of 15 points.
Oh, wow.
The other way to score is sacks allowed. 0 is a max of 15 points. 1 is the middle, 10 points. Only 2 sacks allowed, 5 points. More than 2 sacks allowed, you don't score. So offensive line scores typically are pretty low. And I've weighted the coach's proposal similarly to offensive line, so the max is 30. So,
but you got a website that's willing to keep the scoring on coaching?
Yeah, it's all done. Well, not on coaching. That would be something I would have to do, but it would take me 10 minutes.
Okay. That's very...
They're not going to vote it in.
That's impressive. That's an impressive thought. But you think they're not going to vote it?
I don't think they will.
Okay.
I've laid it. I don't even know if they've read the proposal I have, because they're so put off by the idea of it.
Well, it's a ridiculous idea.
Right. So if you join the league, it'd be perfect, because you could ignore my emails both about the show and about fantasy football proposals.
When you put it that way, I'm probably in.
Yeah.
All right, I'll let you know tomorrow. Jason Stark joins us next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
From the MLB Network, The Athletic, and Stadium, he is Jason Stark with us weekly on McNeil and Parkins on The Score. How's it going, Jason?
It's going good, Danny. How are you doing, man?
We're doing very well, thank you. You did a lot of reporting earlier in the season about where baseball is on, you know, improving the game and modernizing the game, speeding it up, instant replay, all sorts of things like that.
Yep.
Jeff Passan was on with us earlier this week, and he threw something in at the end of the conversation that I had not heard about, which was a thought that once we got to a point where the strike zone could be automated, you know, the equivalent robot umpires, a strike zone that changed based on the count. And it started out small to incentivize a batter swinging at the first pitch, and then it grew a little bit from strike one to strike two, and then strike two to strike three, thinking that it would put the priority back on starters over relievers because they'd go longer into the game, the ball would be put in play more, there'd be more action, and the strike zone would be automated. Have you heard anything like that proposed?
I've heard thinking aloud about this. I've heard it kicked around. I don't think there's any appetite for making it happen at this point, and I don't know how you'd write that rule that would make it legal. I was in the group to talk to Rob Manfred about the automated strike zone over the All-Star break, and he just didn't seem that interested. There are people in the game who are really interested, but he's not one of them. He talked about his fears that if you have an automated strike zone and the umpire behind home plate isn't really calling pitches, then does that umpire lose his ability to control the game in other ways? And he feels like that control is important. So we have got a long way to go before we get to something that futuristic. But I understand the concept, and there are definitely people who are interested in it.
How long before robot umpires? Forget the expanding strike zone with the count. I mean, at the earliest, what would you suspect?
I think technologically, we're really close.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what's going to be the obstacle at this point. It's convincing the human beings. And I just don't get the sense in the sport right now that anybody agrees on anything.
So
when the next labor deal is 2021. You definitely won't see it before then.
When you said there are definitely people in the game that are interested, are those managers, players, executives? Who are those people?
There are players, hitters primarily. There are executives. There are people in the commissioner's office who are really intrigued by it. But there are a lot of ripple effects to it that people probably haven't considered. You know, the ability of the umpire to control the game is one. I was talking to a guy about this in maybe the last couple of weeks, and he said, think about all the time we spend right now trying to find catchers who can frame. He said, if we went to the automated strike zone, that entire topic goes away. That entire skill set becomes irrelevant unless somebody can figure out some way to fool the robot umpire. And this
Hackers,
is the kind of
Russia.
Thing that they have not fully explored yet. What are all the consequences of what seems to be a simple change?
You know, we've been watching replay now for several years, and Jason, we hit a stretch. I think it started Friday afternoon. Danny and I were at the ballpark for the Cubs-Padres, and there were a couple games that followed over the weekend where there just seemed to be a ton of replays and many reversals, most of them reversed. And I walked away from that series thinking, replay's working. Do you feel that instant replay is working or not?
I do. It's not perfect, but I've always been a replay fan. I'm sure you guys know that. And the reason is, if you have technology, why would you not use it? Like, why would you feel it's acceptable when the wrong team wins? Right? Like, most of the time now, thanks to replay, the right team wins. You don't have teams that win a game because an umpire just blatantly missed a call. I mean, that part of the game has largely gone away. Now, I would love to see the system streamlined. I would love to have managers decide instantaneously instead of, you know, putting a hand up, waiting for the video crew to look at it. That's dead time I would love to see eliminated. But other than that, the system basically has done what it's designed to do, and that is take the horrendous, obvious missed call and fix it.
Jason Stark from The Athletic and MLB Network is our guest. I'll take a drastic right turn here. I read a piece today about Justin Verlander and 200 wins and how 200 wins is the new 300 wins. Off of that, I had the following thought. Do you think John Lester will be a Hall of Famer?
Really interesting question. I would say right now he's probably on the not quite list. And when I say that, I just want to remind everybody that to say that you're not quite a Hall of Famer is not an insult. It's a compliment. It means you're one of the greatest players who ever played baseball. But in Lester's case, I mean, he's got the postseason resume with two different teams. He's got a no-hitter. He's had a number of consistently good seasons. How many dominating seasons for John Lester? I think that's his problem. You know, he's not a strikeout per inning guy in an age of strikeouts. He's not a I'm going to go out and shut you out every night kind of guy. Give him the ball, get out of the way. He's not quite that. He's just one of those incredibly valuable people and pitchers in the sport who you can start the season knowing pretty much what he is and what you're going to get. There's tremendous value in that. I'm just not sure it makes him a Hall of Famer. What do you guys think?
I don't know. It's a great conversation for down the road. I'm a little bit more. My gray matter is going to what John Lester is going to do the remaining 6 weeks of this baseball season, because he's not been the same guy he was the first 3 months of it.
No, I don't blame you. And you know, I would say that the perception of the Cubs in general is, do they have enough starting pitching to make it through 4 weeks of October against the best teams in the sport? I know there's questions about the consistency of the offense and who's going to be the closer and a lot of stuff. And I have great confidence in their ability to make big plays and handle the moment. But do they have enough pitching? And in order for us to answer that question, yeah, sure, John Lester has to be really good, and he hasn't been lately. I mean, he's been remarkably good, considering as you've watched him, it doesn't feel like he has the same bullets in the arsenal that he used to have, and he's so smart and resourceful, he has found a way, but not lately. And when a guy hits 33, 34 years old, I think that's a concern.
Yeah, the peripherals on Lester are not good. The last five or six starts are not good. And the last time out, it was warm and the wind was blowing out. And you could just tell from the first batter of the game, it was like, oh, God, this is not the guy you want out there.
Mm-hmm.
Where I take some solace is the 148 career postseason innings with a 2.55 postseason ERA. And you get him in 50-degree weather with the wind blowing in October with his mental approach to the game. It's like, all right, in that spot, do I hate giving the ball to Lester? No. In August at Wrigley with the wind blowing out, do I hate giving the ball to Lester? Hell yes, I do.
Yeah, I think that's well said. I also think, you know, there's a value in him being around Cole Hamels. You know, they've often been compared. You know, as a guy who has emailed me for, I don't know, at least a decade. And he does this thing called baseball twins. He picks out players who he is constantly comparing as baseball twins. And for this entire stretch, for over a decade, he's had Cole Hamels and John Lester as twins. And now here they are on the same staff. Wouldn't it be funny if one of the reasons that the Cubs felt so good about getting Hamels was there was John Lester to help him, and maybe it'll turn out to be the other way around?
Yeah, no kidding. And you'd probably, in terms of your useless information, four lefty starters in a rotation, right? Quintana, Montgomery, Lester, Hamels, and then Kyle Hendricks, who's a righty who throws like a lefty?
I know. So much of October comes down to matchups. And for the Cubs, I think that's going to be especially true.
Do you like in terms of what? Who would they match up well with or badly?
Yeah, I would rather have more balance. But hey, if they were to match up with a team that was loaded with left-handed bats, and you know, right now in the National League, the range of possibilities is so great. It's hard to say who they match up best with, but I don't think you'd want a team predominantly right-handed on the other end. I think the Braves come to mind as a team that whose best hitters tend to be left-handed, who you would much rather see the Cubs play them.
But we're a long ways from that right now.
Jason Stark, every Thursday with us on McNeil and Parkins on Sports Radio 670, The Score. If Brandon Morrow is not a part of the stretch run, should Cubs fans feel secure with Pedro Strop waiting to get the last three outs?
You know, yeah, I think he asked me a variation of this question last week, Dan. And, you know, Pedro Strop's done well. I can remember going to see the Rangers his rookie year, and Mike Maddux was the pitching coach. And I said, if there was a word to describe where Pedro Strop is going in his career, what would that be? And he said to me, closer. Now, I don't know that we've seen enough of that to agree, right, up till now. But he's held the fort. He's been fine.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you would look at Pedro Strop and when he walks into the game and it's game six of the World Series, you're thinking, when do we start the parade?
No.
But, you know, right now, considering the options, it's working out well. I'd feel a lot better Brandon Morrow if you knew he was going to come back and be himself. I just look at this today. He's given up three extra base hits the whole season. I want that guy pitching in October.
Yeah, Morrow's been fantastic, obviously, even with this Cubs and the Cubs season and the injuries and all that. He's been fantastic when he's been out there. There's been some Yoan Moncada conversation around town recently. It's only 636 career at-bats, but he's leading the league in strikeouts. And a lot of them, it's like he's got such a good eye, Jason, but a lot of those strikeouts are looking. Do you downgrade him in terms of his ceiling based on this year, or is this a normal struggle in terms of understanding a major league strike zone in a first 600 at-bats of a career?
You know, I don't know that any of those words exactly apply, but he's obviously an intriguing talent. And he's obviously a guy who goes up there with a plan. And the problem is right now, big league pitchers are exploiting that plan. You know, if you're going to hit with two strikes as much as he does, then you have to have a better understanding of everything that entails. He's in these deep counts, at bat after at bat after at bat, and you know, it's great to take pitches, but you have to be taking pitches for a purpose. And right now, I don't get that sense when I watch him consistently. I don't think he knows exactly what the purpose is, what the end game is, what that pitch is that he's looking for, that he's going to drive. I mean, the reason to take pitches is that you haven't gotten that pitch that you're looking for. Right, that pitch that's in your game plan to drive that time at the plate. When you watch him, do you feel like you're watching a guy who knows exactly what he's up there to do?
No, I don't.
No.
I don't. And you know what? In the frying pan is hotter because the guy they traded for is leading a team potentially to 113 victories. Chris Sale's second in baseball in earned run average and number one in WHIP. That makes it that much more painful. Just like Cubs fans earlier in the year looking at Arrieta's stats while watching Hugh Darvish cry.
I'm sorry. This is what this trade was always going to be.
Sure, Sale now and hopefully Moncada later.
Yeah, you knew that Chris Sale was going to be great in Boston.
Uh-huh.
Right? There's no doubt about that. The question was, what were Moncada and Kopech going to be?
Yeah.
And that was going to be a long waiting game to find that out. We're not there yet.
The thing that's interesting to me about what Moncada's going through is, you know, I hear all the time the conversation about, like, can you learn plate discipline? And a lot of people say no. Like, we talk about it with Albert Almora all the time, or Javi Baez in his MVP conversation, his OBP being low. It's like, well, if Moncada has the plate discipline but is almost too disciplined, that strikes me as something that can be improved upon and can be taught and learned.
I agree. I think it could be as simple as the right voice in his ear who makes the light bulb go on. You've got to be aggressive in certain situations, in certain counts, with certain pitches, certain locations,
And that's the part of the journey he has not completed. There's a difference between plate discipline and pitch recognition. He's got the plate discipline part. I don't think he's got the pitch recognition part yet. But I agree with you. I think a guy with this eye can find that. But that doesn't mean it's going to be an easy path to get there. The path is what you're watching now. Fasten your seatbelts.
Yeah, 163 strikeouts on August 9th. Jason Stark from The Athletic and MLB Network. We'll talk to you next week.
Always a pleasure, man. Thanks.
Thanks, Jason.
Thank you. That's Jason Stark with us on The Score. We got a Bears report in just over 20 minutes from Mark Grody.
Bears and Groats.
It's not just a Bears report.
Thank you.
It's a Bears report with Mark Grody.
Mark Grody's Bears report.
And he has a new impression that I haven't heard yet that I'm told is spectacular. So we're going to unveil that coming up in just over 20 minutes on The Score.
He does these impersonations. I swear, you would think it was the real people.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.